And we're back here on Unusual Sources, 93.3 CFMU FM, broadcasting to Hamilton at 93.3 on the FM dial and the rest of the world on our online streaming service, cfmu.mcmaster.ca. So I'm very pleased today to say that we're going to be interviewing Sarah Flounders. She's been a guest before on our program. She's one of America's leading anti-war activists. She's with the International Action Center, a founding member and member of the administrative committee of UNAC, which we'll hear about later, a journalist with Workers' World and featured on various international media publications. So, Sarah, thanks very much for being on our program today.
Well, thank you, Brendan. It's good to be here talking with you.
Well, I'm really excited because I got something that was sent to me twice by email from different places. A few days ago, it was a statement by UNAC, the anti-war organization. And it's a very powerful and clear statement that you co-sponsored. And we'll get to that. But I'm just wondering, for our Canadian audience in particular, can you tell us what UNAC is?
Yes, that stands for the United National Anti-War Coalition. Our website is UNACPeace.org, UNACPeace.org, and formed, I think, 6-7 years ago. Founding conference was hundreds of activists, and we've since had two other very important conferences, again, hundreds of forces in the anti-war movement, very much united on opposition to all U.S. wars and also addressing racism right here at home. Racism, Islamophobia, attacks on immigrants, what's really become U.S. war policy domestically and internationally.
No, of course. Many of the people involved in UNAC reads like a who's who of the U.S. anti-war movement going back 10, 14, 15 years or more. I remember some of the faces and voices of people that we had seen opposing the war in Iraq, organizing demonstrations month after month, year after year, consistently a presence in the United States and working outside of the country as well. I got this statement by email, and it was really great and inspiring, and it's right on the UNAC webpage. I'm looking at it right now on an iPad on Pocket. It's called A Response by the United National Anti-War Coalition to the Attack on the Anti-War Movement from Terry Burke, published in These Times. So basically, it looks like a statement or an article that was in These Times that mentioned a number of anti-war organizations and criticized them prompted this response by UNAC. So we have this article by Terry Burke, and yes, it is in These Times. And I tried to sort of follow the line of argumentation there to see what was being said in this article about the anti-war movement. And what I got from it, there seemed to be two major lines of argument that were related, I suppose. The first is that the U.S. peace movement needs to stop being so centered on U.S. imperialism, and second, that it instead needs to listen to the voices of progressive Syrians. Now, that's a line I've heard quite frequently over the last 5 years, and it might be familiar to people watching Libya as well, because we were told the same thing, and that we need to listen to Syrian voices. Now, in fact, this is a very disingenuous statement, and I'm wondering if you can tell us why that is.
Well, the very people who are raising it and trying to spread a great deal of confusion are really doing so to justify U.S. intervention, U.S. bombing, U.S. arming of Contra and thoroughly reactionary forces, and doing so through Saudi Arabia, through Turkey, through Israel. And how do you justify these wars? By saying, let's not pay attention to what U.S. imperialism is doing. Why, that's minor. We're speaking for the Syrian people. And the people that they claim to be speaking for are really an all but non-existent force. As in every war, there are two sides. One is, in this war, the government of Syria, where the U.S. is completely committed, as they say again and again, to regime change. That means the total overturn, the smashing of the Syrian state as it exists now, and the forces that the U.S. has armed and trained coming into power. And anyone who has any confusion as to where that leads has only to look at Libya or at Iraq today and see the howling wasteland that has been created. These were countries that previously had, by UN measure, by hundreds of organizations that have looked at these countries, they had full free health care, free education, electrification, potable water, had vastly increased the infrastructure. In other words, they had made real gains for the population. And what did U.S. bombing and destruction and arming of these Contra death squads do? And is to totally unravel the government and put nothing in its place. And while the U.S. bombs were targeting the very infrastructure, the roads, the hospitals, the electrification, the whole communications grid, these are what the U.S. targets. So we need to really talk about what U.S. wars do and who are the forces that they back, which are wholly reactionary, have no progressive content and no ability or interest in reorganizing society.
Yes.
It is war for Wall Street profit, no matter how you look at it.
Well, these interventions, Libya, Syria, and other, the UNEC article mentions quite a lot of U.S. interventions that we can all remember. They largely have destroyed countries that created real crisis in that, yes, the smashing of a state, the removal of a government, the change of a regime materially devastates the bulk of the population such that their lives are worse than they were before, worse in terms of living standards, worse socially, worse politically. This is the context in which this is all happening. But we keep hearing, as you say, this refrain, which is we need to listen to Syrian voices. And I find that interesting because it doesn't really specify exactly which voices, for the most part, except for a few selected, handpicked people. I know that 3 or 4 years ago, when it was clear that the Syria conflict was going to be quite a big deal, a number of anti-war organizations went and actually spoke with Syrians. They spoke with Syrians inside Syria. They spoke with the Syrian government. They spoke with Syrian expatriates, Syrians living in Toronto. For example, the Taylor Report talked to them 3 or 4 years ago, was very excited. These were Syrian voices that did not want to see intervention in their country. They did not want to see U.S. intervention. They didn't want to see Turkish intervention. They didn't want to see Saudi intervention. They did not want to see an armed conflict forced on their country. But these voices were not paraded in front of us in the corporate media. You had to go to alternative media. You had to go to the Taylor Report. You had to go to unusual sources talking about the reconciliation program in Syria, Mother Agnes Miriam. Are these the voices that we're being encouraged to listen to by Terry Burke?
No, they're not those voices. They're really hand-picked folks who, for the most part, are Western media activists and the groups that they self-select. It's not the overwhelming population of Syria who finds themselves in a desperate war for their survival, and they have only to look at Libya or Iraq right next door to see what fate befalls them if the government is smashed. So it is an effort to change, though, the topic and take it off of this being a U.S. war or being an attempt at U.S. regime change. By say, let's listen to Syrian voices, they're saying, let's not look at what U.S. imperialism and the U.S. military command of NATO is doing in these countries. That's not the topic they want to discuss. And by refusing to even recognize that U.S. imperialism in fact exists. I mean, U.S. bases in 130 countries around the world, more than 1,000 U.S. foreign bases. That's something like five times the amount of total bases of every other country in the world put together. And these are just the bases in foreign countries that the U.S. has. So, and it's not counting the nuclear submarines and the aircraft carriers, the destroyers, and so on. So unless we look at what the U.S. military machine is and the Wall Street profits that it serves, the way in which they're using their wars for super profits for the military and oil industries, for the military contractors and the mercenaries who profit enormously from these wars. And we're going to go and instead listen to a few self-selected Syrian voices. That's a completely unreasonable and disingenuous demand. And we have to really, I think, criticize and take on those people who say the U.S. peace movement should ignore U.S. wars. I mean, what are we about?
Well, if you spend a lot of time in liberal academia, they talk about the danger of marginalizing voices or erasing voices and erasing struggles. And it seems to me that articles like Terry Burke's and others that we've seen recently, what they seek to do is erase U.S. imperialism. They want to make it so that it's not part of the discussion. So the fact that the United States has been calling for the overthrow of the Syrian government for the last 5 years openly and planning for it as far back as 2006, according to some documents, that there is all sorts of logistical preparations. The fact that U.S. client states in the Middle East, the Gulf monarchies like Saudi Arabia and others, as well as Turkey, a state in NATO, have been funneling arms, mercenaries, equipment into Syria for 5 years, ran an oil supply chain consisting of hundreds of trucks that made daily trips from the occupied parts of Syria into the Turkish border to conduct a daily oil trade that would fund ISIS and al-Nusra and other organizations. I mean, these are all material things that were happening, but some people like that to all just disappear and make this, as you said, about a few self-selected voices. And if you talk to other Syrians who don't agree with these self-selected voices, you are repressed. So I think it was, the UNAC statement made reference to Terry Burke's criticism that there were protesters in the United States at anti-war demonstrations who were waving Syrian government flags. So there were demonstrations in the United States where some of the demonstrators were waving the two-star flag of the sovereign government of Syria. And they were criticized for doing this by someone who says we should listen to Syrian voices. But if there's Syrians who want to fly their own flag at an anti-war demonstration, are we not allowed to listen to their voices?
Right. We're supposed to self-police and rip those flags down. We're supposed to tell Syrians they can't defend their own government. It's an absolutely outrageous and it's a false position. Now, let's look at the politics of Terry Burke, who claims that she is a Nicaragua solidarity activist. That's strongly disputed by many who don't know her in such a role. They know her disruptive forces within the anti-war movement, and she's been asked to leave different groups because she was so disruptive. But if we look at Nicaragua and the U.S. war, the U.S. effort to overturn, to impose regime change on Nicaragua, what did they do? They organized the Contras. That's beyond dispute. The Contra war in Nicaragua was U.S. arming of completely reactionary forces that were tied to the old regime. This was the whole Reagan policy. Even after it was outlawed by the U.S. Congress and the mining of the harbor in Managua, looking back to that, the U.S. was determined to overturn the government in Nicaragua. And it's the same policy. That's exactly what they're doing in Syria today. They're using Contra forces, mercenary and U.S. organized groupings to overturn the government.
Well,
and they're also saying that Syria has no right to call for assistance from any of its allies. In other words, the U.S. and 13 NATO and Gulf state countries are bombing Syria without Syria's permission or request and destroying so much of it. And at the same time, they say, how dare Syria appeal for help from Russia or from Iran or from Hezbollah? The only thing they want is total collapse. And that is what they're demanding, and they use supposedly, I mean, Terry Burke is using her history in a past movement, supposedly, but when the U.S. policy was the same.
Well, it's ironic.
Contra forces for regime change.
Well, I mean, in that case, you know, if Terry Burke is citing her past work in Nicaragua solidarity, wouldn't her current arguments have justified the U.S. Contra war in Nicaragua? Because, I mean, back
exactly.
You know, in the Reagan days, you had people that were calling themselves freedom fighters. And they said, we're fighting for freedom and democracy, and we're a revolution against that evil, nasty, totalitarian, Russian-backed regime, whatever. So, you know, we need to support those rebels, right? I mean, because they're fighting for freedom. And why don't you listen to their voices? Why are you being, you know, so U.S.-centric when you're talking about these Contras? So, I mean, if you had done work in the Nicaragua Solidarity Committee, why would you want to use arguments that would have justified the U.S. Contra war?
That's exactly the contradiction, and it shows it's untenable. I think we have to, again and again, regardless of who we're speaking to, come back to it's the role of the anti-war movement to oppose U.S. imperialist wars and to see who is the danger around the world. If we get in line in the demonization of one country after another, then we're part of the U.S. war machine. We're apologists for the U.S. war machine. And those who refuse to put any attention on U.S. wars, U.S. bases, U.S. sanctions, U.S. military coups in one country after another, if they refuse to put any attention on that, and instead, you know, they're running around saying, let's not look at that. Let's look at this individual voice here. Let's look at that individual voice there. I don't think that's part of the anti-war movement at all.
You know, people,
that is part of the U.S. propaganda machine.
People were more clear-headed about this about 10 years ago. I mean, when people were attacking, when the United States and its friends were attacking Iraq, there were Iraqis that said, oh, please bomb my country, or please, we need regime change, whatever. But
that's right.
You know, overall, we said, regardless of the feelings of some people within the country, we feel it's our job to restrain our governments with regard to Iraq. And that was the right policy. It turned out to be the right policy. And it goes back to a long history of anti-war activism. So, for example, in the war on Vietnam, people were saying, hands off Vietnam. You know, would Terry Burke say that you're being U.S.-centric when you're saying, you know, keep U.S. hands off Vietnam? It's gotten to the point where the argument is basically that it's U.S.-centric to talk about U.S. imperialism. So it's imperialist to talk about U.S. imperialism, I guess.
That's right. It's a completely contradictory, an untenable position. But we should recognize that the U.S. wars in Iraq, in Libya, earlier in Yugoslavia, and back to Vietnam did have supporters in universities, in publications, always claiming to be talking about the crimes of someone else, and also always demanding that the movement here demonize the country that was targeted and attacked, which says, let's justify this war. And that certainly has been a tactic back to the Korean War, and we could look at U.S. history. This has been the tactic back to the wars against the indigenous people, there's always an effort to use racism, extreme bigotry, enormous fear-mongering, and demand that everyone jump on board and salute. And in every war, it's almost the same tactic that's used. Wow. Gruesome stories and a claim that it's a humanitarian intervention, that this war will bring peace.
I've noticed that.
I think we have to answer it every time.
The people that say we need to stopping U.S.-centric, stop looking at the role of the United States, stop seeing things from a U.S. lens or U.S. perspective, I notice that they, in fact, tend to adopt the language utilized by the United States to describe countries it doesn't like. So, you know, these activists that talk about revolutions, Libyan revolution, Syrian revolution, they talk about the Libyan regime or the Syrian regime led by a dictator or a strongman killing his own people. You know, these are language. This is language primarily used to refer to the global South, to countries
that
you know, are apparently they're unable to govern themselves, or they need external intervention to take down the government because it's a dictatorship. It's a regime led by a dictator, a strong man. These are terms that are used to delegitimize governments that are rarely applied to first world governments. But the people who say they're so, you know, post-colonial and not orientalist are using a very orientalist language.
They certainly are. And I think we need to call them out, and also at the same time keep it focused on what are the big corporate interests in this war. Why do they want us to hate this next country? And why do they want to suddenly highlight, quote from, reprint those who support their wars? Well, that's just what paid propaganda is all about. And we need to refuse to go along with it and to say, no, these wars are for corporate profit. This is the largest center of profit on Wall Street today. It's the wars, it's the military industry and the oil industry. And it creates ruin in whole parts of the world. I mean, it has created millions of refugees, these wars. And not only refugees abroad, but it also impoverishes right here in the U.S. We have, when you build up a repressive apparatus, that also comes home. We have the largest prison population in the world, times 10. I mean, it's incredible the size of the police force and the prison population in the U.S. today. And this is a direct connection to the military wars abroad and to the growing ruin in U.S. cities today.
Well, there's a saying, which is colonialism comes home.
That's right.
Colonialism comes home. And I said it. I said it 10 years ago. I said it during the Iraq war demonstrations. I said, what is being done in Iraq is going to come home. And it has come home in a number of ways for all the countries that were involved, or, you know, involved in some smaller capacity. The phone tracking systems that are used to hunt down rebels and insurgents are being deployed here. All these monitoring equipment, the crowd control devices being used in Iraq are coming here. The bomb trucks, the mine vehicles, all these things, these occupation vehicles are going to be seen in United States streets. There's all these demobilized veterans who have all sorts of problems that need to be addressed. Those are just some of the ways in which the war comes back home. And of course, Europe is now facing this enormous migrant crisis, which has become a major focus of debate and anxiety, and it's the direct result of the U.S.-led wars against Iraq. And, of course, one of the countries that opened its arms and took in the most refugees and migrants relative to its population was Syria. It has taken in Palestinians, it has taken in Iraqis, received no thanks from anyone, and now those people are endangered by this foreign aggression against them. So, you know, just coming back to that topic, to round things out about listening to Syrians, you know, from the very outset of the war, that is what a lot of people in the anti-war movement did. And if a country is being attacked by this predatory superpower, the most belligerent country on the planet, the United States, it's the job of activists in that country to seek out people that are being under attack in the expatriate community or in that country, to talk to journalists in Syria, to talk to people on the street in Syria, send delegations, talk to the government. What are they saying? You're not going to hear it on CNN, so you're going to have to talk to them yourself. And I know UNAC has sent delegations. You need to look at the religious community. There have been many priests and people from various faiths in Syria who have made statements on the crisis and what they want to be done and how they want refugees to come home, all of which are totally unheard among people who claim to listen to Syrians. So I guess my question to you is, you know, given all the involvement of members of UNAC and the Syria Solidarity Movement and other groups, what if you can talk to Syrians, ordinary Syrians, what is it that Syrians would tell you about the conflict today?
Well, overwhelmingly, they say, we can resolve this problem ourselves if the U.S. and its mercenaries would just get out. There's more than 100,000 mercenaries operating in Syria today. It's an incredible, more than 1,000 units. All kinds of groups are operating and even fighting each other. and organized from all different countries. This and none of them have a progressive role at all. I mean, it's not only ISIS, Daesh, and al-Nusra, which is really al-Qaeda in Syria. There's all kinds of groups, armed groups, operating to just pull Syria apart. Now, it's amazing that Syria has been able to stand up for so long. It's more than 5 years. And the first U.S. predictions were they wouldn't last 2 weeks, and then they wouldn't last 2 months, and then it was any day now we'll bring this government down. And they haven't succeeded because there has been real organized resistance at an incredible level from the people of Syria.
Absolutely.
Who are determined. They're determined. They're going to have their own government. It was a secular government. It was a government where the different religious and ethnic and cultural backgrounds lived together. And that's still their message now. On a trip that delegations that I've been on to Syria, you meet immediately with both Christian and Muslim, different Muslim groups. And they say, we all have rights and respect in this government, and that's why we stand with it. So their message is absolutely the same all over the many different confessions or religious groups within Syria today. Mm-hmm. And it's the same, especially women are maybe the most adamant, the fiercest on this, because they look around the region and they know in Syria, women have a very high both educational and professional positions in the government, in the universities, in the medical. I mean, you could look at any area. And as a secular government, there's not restrictions placed on them. And they compare it to what their position in society would be in Saudi Arabia.
Yes.
An Arab country totally under the thumb of a feudal monarchy, where women have no rights whatsoever. So they know what's at stake if they don't succeed in maintaining Syria. And they are also very proud of an ancient culture. I mean, consider Damascus and Aleppo, two cities that are the oldest inhabited, one of the oldest inhabited cities on the earth, continuously inhabited, 5,000-6,000 years of history. And beautiful, magnificent areas that existed in both these cities that were, before the war, visited. It was a vacation, a holiday, an archaeological site. And now that also is in ruin, what is a heritage for the world.
It is a proud civilization, and we did listen. We listened to the elections that were held. We've listened
right.
to the Syrian community in Toronto. They've told us not only that they want the foreign mercenaries out, but that they want the refugees to come home. And so many of the refugees and families that we've heard from, you know, they want this fighting to be over. They want the government to be restored, and they want to come back to safe areas. And it's just interesting that you mentioned women there, because yes, people don't understand in the United States, but Syria is not Saudi Arabia. Syria is a secular and modernizing government. And what's interesting, of course, is that Syrian women are fighting in their army against these terrorists. There are whole units of Syrian women. We see Kurdish women that's been popularized in leftist media. There are Syrian women in the largest, most important fighting force in the country. And I think that's something that we should not forget. Definitely 5 years of difficult war, the government is still there, the people are still holding on. I think they've demonstrated tremendous agency. People have said, respect Syrian agency. And the Syrian agency has been to resist this powerful structure of U.S. military and political and financial dominance. And they've demonstrated tremendous agency in that respect. And I guess my only concern here is that with Libya and Syria, there's been divisions in the anti-war movement. There's been distractions towards supporting self-selected groups that want to overthrow the government at the same time the United States does. And it seems to me that if you're the United States and you want to topple a government, it could greatly facilitate things if you have some groups in there and you can talk about a revolution that leftists allegedly need to support abroad. So I'm just wondering how you think the anti-war movement should address this conflict or future conflicts in which the U.S. supports internal destabilization and tells us that there's a revolution or something going on?
Well, I think the most important way to do it is to consciously build unity and cooperation among all the forces who are determined to oppose U.S. wars, to come together on statements, on actions which say, hands off Syria, U.S. out, and which try to also explain globally what these wars are doing and what these U.S.-created alliances are doing in looting whole parts of the world and creating the refugee crises. Now, we can't answer every possible voice that's put forward because that is the role of the corporate media. It is to pull people in with lies and to pull them in also with fear and demonization. So it becomes impossible to look at the country involved. Part of the thing when you know, U.S. bombs fall, in the media they always claim that they're bombing Saddam Hussein or they're bombing Gaddafi or now they're bombing Assad. Of course, who they're really bombing is the entire population. But by focusing on one person, they take it off of that image in the U.S. For the U.S. population. They're trying to, by raising one evil boogeyman, so to speak, to take it off the attention of what happens when you're destroying the sanitation, the sewage, the electric grid of a country.
Yes.
And we want to always bring it back to that. These wars are against an entire country. They're meant to recolonize the world. They're intended to destroy what has been built up over generations. It's about regaining oil and pipelines and really that hold that existed 100 years ago. And there are people all over the world that are refusing to go back to that. They understand very well U.S. wars, and they're resisting in every form that is possible to do. And I think that's what we want to focus attention on again and again, and also to show that there are forces against these wars that exist right within the United States today, that are in the union movement, in community movements, in the peace movement has, you know, or the anti-war movement has threads into so many organizations and groups and campuses and so on. We need to emphasize that strength and connection much more.
Yes.
That when we speak, we're speaking in the interests of millions of poor and working people right here, who are rejecting the prisons and the police right here. When we look at the Black Lives Matter movement in the U.S., what's it doing? It's opposing militantly in the streets the role that the police play here. Now, it's no different than the role that the U.S. military is playing in another country. It's so comparable that making those links is not hard to do.
Mm-hmm. And certainly UNAC and the International Action Center and other groups are helping lead the way in that struggle. So thanks very much for being on our program, and thanks for giving us...
Thank you. Thank you. And really, thank you also to the very important anti-war peace forces in Canada who have done an enormous amount in listening to Syrian voices who say, we represent our country, our whole people, and we can resolve this if you just get U.S. off our neck.